Bill McMahon, it's great to talk to you. You and I know each other a very long time, and you certainly are a familiar name to those who have been participating in and following the industry for years. The thing that makes you very special to the world of Talkers Magazine is that you were the first interview that we conducted in the very first issue of Talkers, the industry's, I think we called it the information radio newspaper. I think that was its subhead back then, in July of 1990. And here we are now in September of 2014 having another conversation. Can you believe it has been a quarter of a century since we debuted this magazine, and that, and when you were on the cover as the first interview? Amazing stuff, huh?
Well, I'm happy for you and all your success. I'm not very happy that you reminded me how long ago that happened.
Well,
that makes us both very old, Michael, or we were incredibly young when we spoke.
We were extremely young, and what did Bob Dylan say? I was so much older then, I'm younger than that now. Let's find the positive in all of this. But when you stop and think about it, when you stop and think about trends, and you stop and think about how fads come and go, and how radio formats come and go, the fact that talk radio, which had already been around for many, many years before Talkers and before Rush Limbaugh, and we started Talkers Magazine based on the premise that talk radio was an industry unto itself as opposed to a sideshow, when you stop and think that it's still a major format 25 years later, and that guys like you and me are still working, and perhaps even have some relevance left, I think it's kind of something to be proud of, as opposed to necessarily to, feel as unfortunate. And you should be very proud that you're still going strong.
No, it's a good thing.
Yeah, absolutely. So tell me, 25 years later, when you think back to the conversation we had in the interview that we ran, how have things changed? Are things where you thought they would be in a quarter century? Would you have believed that we would be having this conversation a quarter of a century later if I had told you that first day we met?
Well, you know what's really kind of interesting to me and a bit sad is I don't know that things have changed all that much. When we talked, we talked about the state of radio and where it was and what was happening, and particularly talk radio. And at that point, Rush Limbaugh had been syndicated for a couple of years and was just starting to make some noise. And talk radio, we talked about all of its potential and what it could be, and I think I prognosticated all kinds of stuff about how, and I think I was referring to it as spoken word radio back then, and I don't remember if anybody else was. I don't think they were, and I can't say that I picked that term up on my own. That was actually given to me by one of my mentors and a partner in the work that I did back then, whose name is Norm Woodruff. But we talked a lot about how spoken word radio, personality radio, had all kinds of potential and could have all kinds of different formats based on different people's interests and things that they needed to have done for them. And unfortunately, Rush Limbaugh and what he created, how he changed the industry, became talk radio, and that pretty much became what talk radio was defined as, you know, his version of talk radio, I guess with one exception, which was also kind of starting back then, and that was sports radio.
Yeah, sports talk radio and news talk radio, and then if you slice it even tighter, conservative news talk radio,
right,
have become the two major genres. You and I have had some conversations over the years. It is disappointing to me, and I think you agree, that the loosely defined shock jock kind of radio, lifestyle pop culture talk radio, because I don't like the term shock jock, but I use it because people tend to know what it means, that never caught on as a format. It's always a sideshow. It's a morning show on a music station. But there are all these great lifestyle talk shows on FM music stations that don't seem to be categorized by the culture at large as being part of talk radio, but they are. And I had hoped by now there would have been hundreds of such stations around the country, 24/7, doing that kind of programming around the clock with a strong, you know, bench, a strong arsenal of talent to be able to fill those slots. What are your thoughts on that?
Well, the interesting thing is that, and I really got to thinking about this when we talked about, you know, kind of revisiting that original interview we did for Talkers.
Mm-hmm.
And I started thinking about radio and content creation, and thinking about, you know, how I am kind of disappointed that we haven't developed a lot of different kinds of formats and ideas for radio. But then I got to getting real about the radio industry, and I'm talking about the radio broadcast industry. And when I thought about it, really the radio industry has created very little of its own content since the inception of television. And that's been almost 60 years. The truth is that the music industry created the vast majority of the content for the radio industry, which really just acted as a distribution and promotional arm for the radio or for the music industry. So we haven't created a lot of content, and I think that's one of the things, you know, as we look around and everybody's talking about content and why doesn't radio come up with more, and I'm talking about the radio broadcasting industry, why haven't they come up with more content? I mean, the industry has not created that much content over time. In fact, I think some of the big innovations, when you look, and some of the formats that have been created by people that really weren't recognized as, you know, people that knew what they were doing. And I'm talking about two people in particular, Rush Limbaugh, who had been fired 7 times when I first met him in Kansas City in 1983, and he, you know, was out of radio for 5 years and came back and, you know, was missing it and came back, and we can talk about that whole story, how it happened. But Rush basically created this format on his own and kind of going against all of the conventional wisdom of the day in talk radio, and even becoming very narrow and specialized in the scope of what he did. I mean, if you go look at what he created, he was the first champion of traditional American values and beliefs in conservative politics. And really, you know, created a show that didn't have guests. It didn't interview the mayor. It didn't do any of the stuff that, you know, and it didn't even take lots of phone calls from listeners. It was really about Rush talking about the news of the day, and particularly the news of the day that intersected traditional American values and beliefs and conservatism and conservative politics. And he, you know, was even like a teacher, basically. He was this wonderful teacher on the radio that, you know, anybody who had those kind of values or cared about them came to him, and he even called himself the Limbaugh Institute for Advanced Conservative Studies. And his, you know, his show, his version of talk radio kind of took off in spite of all the people that didn't understand him and had fired him 7 times. The other one that's really interesting to me is Howard Stern. And you look at what Howard did, and again, he was fired multiple times. If you go back and watch his movie, I forget what the name of it is, and where you kind of follow his career, where finally, you know, after the last time he got fired, he said, you know, I'm really tired of trying to do this radio stuff that these program directors and other people want me to do. I'm just, you know, I don't have anything to lose. I've been fired so damn often now. I'm just going to go do what the kind of radio that I think, you know, ought to be done, the kind of radio that I would care about listening to. And, And even then, he was very misunderstood because, you know, because he got ratings and because finally Mel Karmazan became his champion, and that was kind of like the thing with Rush Limbaugh. Until he found both these people, until they found somebody who believed in them and basically let them do what they wanted to do, which, again, went against most of the conventional wisdom of the time, that's where they flourished. But Howard Stern, as an example, and you and I talked about this 25 years ago. In fact, I forget what New York station he was on at the time, and I think I said, I don't understand why they don't build the station around him and do programs that work with him and are like him, personality-type programs, talking about the same kinds of subjects and content as Howard, so they have a full station of it, which they never did.
Well, I think one of the reasons they never did it is because corporations, corporate America, the corporate mind, tends to focus on the wrong thing that they think is the thing that makes something successful.
Totally.
And with Rush Limbaugh, they thought it was because he was conservative. With Howard Stern, they thought it was because he was dirty.
Yep.
And so they only would have these knockoffs that were dirtier than, if he's getting ratings being dirty, imagine how much ratings we could get if we're even dirtier than him or like him.
Totally. Salacious, just crazy type. Vulgar, dirty, gutter stuff. Yeah, and none of them lasted.
Yeah, it's funny. I think Howard Stern is obviously, I mean, big deal. I'm saying this. Everybody knows it. He's a brilliant radio talent, one of the most brilliant of all time. But I actually believe, this is my own opinion, that had Howard Stern done it clean, he still would have been as big and maybe bigger.
I completely agree with you. I think, some of the really edgy stuff that he did, I think it got him noticed and probably got him sampled and stuff, but you can't last. It's like eating frosting or chocolate all day. You can't last if that's all you do. And if you look at Howard, this may be an oversimplification, but Howard does this show that I guess I would categorize as exploring life, in particular the joys and sorrows of life, real life stuff. And, one of my favorite Howard Stern things, I still use it in my workshops oftentimes, is a segment that he did with Rodney Dangerfield. And Rodney thought, because he bought into the stereotypical image of Howard, that Howard loved to talk about sex and do dirty jokes and whatever. So when he walked into the studio, he started doing dick jokes. And Howard said, "No more dick jokes, Rodney. I don't have you here for that. If you tell another dick joke, you're out of here." He said, I've got you here for two reasons. One is, I never got a chance to thank you the first night I was on The Tonight Show. You were the first guy and the only guy really that called me after I was on The Tonight Show. You didn't know me from a load of coal, but you called me to tell me what a wonderful job I did on The Tonight Show and how much you enjoyed it. And I just wanted to thank you for that. And the other thing I have you here to do is tell me how in the hell you persevered for 40 years through all the failures you had. In fact, I think just before you finally started to make it, you were selling siding, for aluminum siding for homes. I want to hear how you persevered. How did you keep going? And he even told the story about how Rodney was on the Ed Sullivan Show, which many of our listeners to this interview may not even know who that is, but, it was a very popular variety show on television, and Rodney actually appeared on the Ed Sullivan Show. 2 weeks later, he met Ed Sullivan in person at a party, and Ed says, "You're kind of an interesting guy. I think I'd like to have you on my show." And Rodney said, I was on your show 2 weeks ago, and Ed didn't remember.
Oh, my gosh. That's
just one of the things that poor Rodney had to endure.
Oh, but that is so up his alley in terms of I don't get no respect.
Yeah,
I mean, it's almost a cliche.
Exactly. So, I mean, this story was magnificent, all about life and overcoming hurdles and having a dream, and it was a magnificent thing. And more recently, this is in the last year, you know, and this is another example of just exploring real life and getting real and talking about real things that real people encounter in life. I heard a segment he did with Lady Gaga where, and he does this routinely because, you know, he really gets into life stuff. And he got to talking about all of her insecurities. And even though she's this biggest pop star in the world and makes mega bucks and whatever, how insecure she always is and how, you know, she started doing some drugs and stuff to kind of overcome it. And I mean, it was just this really powerful thing. And even to the point where she finally said, you know, I realized drugs were making a mess of me and I had to give them up. And she went into this whole big rant about how bad drugs are, and no matter how bad you feel or whatever, you don't want to be doing drugs. And it was just cool. But that's typical of the kind of stuff, surprising, interesting, real people stuff that you end up getting on Howard Stern. And that's why people listen to him.
That is the reason. And he's a good interviewer, and he is authentic in terms of his take on things and the subject matter that he covers. And going back now to Limbaugh, since we've been talking about these two really huge stars of the last quarter century that we've been looking back at a bit, when Limbaugh started, a lot of what he did was comedic. And even though Jon Stewart had not yet come upon the scene on the level he has now, Limbaugh was very much like a conservative Jon Stewart. It was a very sharp, satirical, cutting, powerful political point of view presented within a comedic, satirical, lighthearted, tongue-in-cheek, self-deprecating, yes, self-deprecating manner. That's changed over the years. Would you agree with me that Limbaugh was a funny guy when he started?
Totally. Yeah, I mean, he has a great sense of humor. But the thing that both of them have, the radio industry, you know, oftentimes kind of shies away from, like, for instance, most morning shows still try to be funny. They still believe that humor is the thing, almost the only thing. And while Rush was, you know, I wouldn't say funny, Rush has a great sense of humor and, you know, satirical, and he loved to do parody stuff and all that kind of stuff. And I forget his line about pointing out stupidity by being stupid. That's not it, but, you know, where he would exaggerate stupid things.
Mm-hmm.
He has a great sense of humor.
Yes.
But both he and Howard have substance. They have depth. They have, you know, insight. They go deep in stuff. You know, you are surprised. You learn. You discover stuff with them when you listen to them. Where many of the, you know, many radio shows, There isn't tons of substance to it.
That's because radio is a medium of formats. Norm Pattis has said that when he came from television. He said television's a medium of shows, and then he went into radio and he realized very quickly radio is a medium of formats. And when you're a medium of formats, it becomes very important to the managers and the programmers that the talent follows the format, as opposed to creates a new format, God forbid. And when you hire people and you develop talent to follow a format, that doesn't mean substance, real stuff, spontaneity, and the ability to turn on a dime. It means to shut up and play the hits. And when the hits become something you say, when the hits become preaching to the choir, when the hits become continuing the time spent listening feeding frenzy that the guy before you began, you start to water down the originality, the authenticity, the depth, the richness, the impact, the emotion that comes from real-life human beings. And what I've seen in the last 25 years And again, I'm not knocking the medium. I'm just trying to analyze it here, and having the opportunity to talk to a guy like you gives me an opportunity to bounce it up and back, because you're a very analytical guy. It's gone from being a medium of interesting people with quirky, unique, authentic, original takes on day-to-day life, which included politics, but wasn't exclusively politics, usually populist politics that didn't like either the left or the right or politicians, and mixed it in with all kinds of other human and social elements. It's evolved from that to preaching to the choir. Preaching to the choir in a targeted way. If it's politics, well, conservative seems to do better than liberal, we preach to conservatives. If it's sports, a certain take on sports now is becoming prevalent, although I do think sports talk radio still has far more of a human element. If it's the shock jock thing, it's the bad boy, or it's the dirty guy. You have to follow that recipe. And I think we've gotten far away from the idea that a talk station is a platform for a variety of extremely interesting, articulate people who are just fascinating by their own humanity. And that's been the change. That's the change I've seen in 25 years. And I'd like your input on this. I think there's nothing necessarily advanced about the way we're going. In other words, I don't think this is necessarily a natural evolution. I think that it could go back to the other way again and do just as well, or explore any number of subjects that could be as big as politics, parapsychology, science, the arts, cooking, money, sex, love, romance. The trends go where the talent lies, as opposed to the trends existing on their own. What do you think?
Well, I find myself agreeing with you, and let's get real about one thing, and this is a very sad thing to me. It is about talent. It is about creative people. It's about, you know, finding those people and letting them explore their creativity and their talent and recognizing if there is a possible format there and what can be done with it. I really don't believe the radio industry attracts the best and the brightest anymore. I mean, it's sad, and I think there's a really good reason for that.
What is the reason?
I think when the best and the brightest listen to what's on the radio, they go, why would I want to be there?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, all of the hopes that you and I had for, you know, and you can call it talk radio, spoken word radio, personality radio, whatever you want to call it. The hopes that we had for that are all now present out there in the podcast world. If you go out and search, I mean, there's a lot of really interesting, good podcasts out there.
Mm-hmm.
The other place that is actually that, you know, commercial broadcasters never paid much attention to, and now they have to because it shows up in the ratings, it shows up in PPM and whatever, are the NPR stations.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
If you look at the really neat shows they've created, and, you know, I mean, you just have to go to their website and look, but, you know, some of my favorites over the year are Car Talk with the two brothers from New Jersey that owned a car store.
Yeah, they still, I mean, they're still on.
Is it Malavasi Brothers?
They're still on the, yeah, the Click and Clack. They're still on the radio and reruns. It's such a good show. And the thing I always hear people say, I'm not interested in cars. I just love these guys' personalities.
Totally. Again, if you listen to the show, there was substance there. They had a wonderful sense of humor, but they also, if you wanted to fix your car or figure out what was wrong with your car, they gave you that. But if you just wanted to be entertained and have fun, they gave you that too.
What I would like to do at this point in the conversation, because I realize you and I can go on forever, and that is something that nobody can do or should do. What I'd like to do is tap into something that you're really, really profoundly good at. You always called your company, which is a consulting company, the authentic personality. And I love that word authentic. I think it's one of the most authentic words we have. Authentic has so much meaning. And the authentic personality. I remember back in the old days when we talked and following your career over the years, you've been very good at listing the traits of a great talk show host. And if you could share with us now what you consider to be some that here, so many decades later, you still feel are important universals that are part of what management or programmer should look for in a talent that can command a 2 or 3 hour show once, twice, or five times a week on the radio. What are those traits?
Well, I've kind of boiled them down to 14 traits that I have identified as the important differentiating traits in the best radio personalities. I'm talking about the very highest performing Rush Limbaughs, Howard Sterns, whatevers of the world. And I basically divided them into three categories. The traits that I call the personal traits, the traits that I refer to as the content traits, or those that actually result in producing great content, and then what I call the performance traits. In the personal traits category, and by the way that I use these, and I like everything else, I created these out of frustration talking to radio managers. In fact, one particular encounter in Portland, Oregon, in a startup a station there, the program director and I were interviewing talent, assembling talent, and the VP of radio wanted to get involved and hear everybody that we were talking to and talking about. And so he came to a meeting with us one day and said, "Okay, what do you got?" And so we started talking about the people that we had and playing, samples of their work. And the first sample that we started to play, I don't think it ran more than a minute or a minute and a half. And this guy says, "He ain't our guy. He ain't our guy." Mm-hmm. And, you know, the program director and I are looking at each other and going, "You're kidding me. You hear 90 seconds of somebody and he's not our guy?" And so we asked him why, you know, and it was like, "Well, I can just tell. I can just tell. I can feel it. I can tell by his voice, his delivery. I can just tell he's not our guy." And so that forced me to try and create a framework to have a real conversation about talent, and one where we could, you know, have some common language and talk about things that really mattered and look for things that really mattered. And that's where I came up with this. So anyway, the personal traits. The first one, and I'm going to summarize these, and the words aren't necessarily dictionary definitions. And by the way, I'd be happy to offer this to anyone who wants it. They can send me an email or whatever, and I'll send them out the 14 traits. But the first one is ego drive, and I'm going to summarize it quickly. The best really believe in themselves, and that's what this ego drive is. They wear this on their sleeve. Some of them hide it. Some of them wear it on their sleeve. You can't see it that easily sometimes. But what they really believe in their heart of hearts is that they're funnier, smarter, more entertaining, more insightful, and they deserve to be on the radio. They deserve to open the mic every day. Now, this confidence can be shaken, you know, with bouts of self-doubt and lots of, critical, negative kind of feedback. But down deep, they believe in themselves. The next one is mission. And this is a big one. Mission is having a purpose beyond themselves, beyond, fame and fortune. And it might be as simple as making people laugh every day, or as profound as, like Dr. Laura, who was trying to, help people become better parents and have better relationships and raise strong children and whatever. But the key is they have a mission. And you'll find this with almost all of the great talent. Like, Rush Limbaugh used to jokingly say that, his job would not be complete until everyone thinks like he does.
Mm-hmm.
Everyone becomes a conservative, and he means that.
I saw a clip recently with Joan Rivers toward the end of her life saying to somebody in an interview, I didn't see who it was, I just caught it out of the corner of my eye, she was saying that making people feel better and making them laugh is a calling. She called it a calling.
Yep.
And that's exactly what you're talking about. It was more than just, I want to be in show business and be successful.
Totally. And, you know, I want to be famous. Or it's like Oprah.
Mm-hmm.
Her whole mission is to help people live their best life.
Mm-hmm.
She's been saying it for years. And if you look at her website, you look at everything Oprah does, it's all about helping people live their best life.
Mm-hmm.
The next one is work intensity. The very best people, they work extremely hard. In fact, the show, their show and what they do is the default setting in their brain. Everywhere they go, everything they do, all they think about is their show. And almost everything they encounter or see becomes a possibility, an idea for their show. The next one is positivity. I have found that the best, and the reason this is important, the best have a fundamentally positive outlook on life. They laugh and smile more. They grouse and whine less. I mean, this isn't to say that once in a while they don't. And they truly do care about whether people like them. And this positivity is what makes them durable over time. In fact, the opposite of this is cynicism and cynics. Now, you will see many cynics that have been on the radio, and, you know, they don't usually last because it's hard to listen to that every day. Most people don't want a black cloud hanging over their head all the time. And not that they want everything to be rosy and whatever all the time, but positivity and having a positive outlook on life overall is extremely important. The final one in the personal traits is having a great sense of humor. And this isn't necessarily, you know, being funny. This is being able to see the humor in life and, you know, seeing things that are amusing and finding the humor in even the most serious kinds of subjects and not taking themselves too seriously, being self-effacing, self-deprecating, you know, enjoying good-natured teasing and harmless pranks and playful tricks. So those are the personal traits: ego drive, mission, work intensity, positivity, and sense of humor. Now the content traits. What does it take trait-wise? What have I found are the key things that cause somebody to create great content? The first one is what I call awareness, and this is being keenly aware of your surroundings and really highly receptive to all kinds of sensory input. In other words, what they see, hear, taste, touch, or smell. They really notice what's going on around them, and they pick up on attitudes and behaviors, and they're great listeners. One of the greatest listeners, and you know this trait really jumped out in, was Dr. Laura, and it was almost something that worked against her. She was so sensitive to what her callers were saying of her, and beyond the words, she could hear into their hearts, and she would oftentimes stop them in their tracks, and it would sound like, you know, she's interrupting and mm-hmm. being rude and whatever.
Yeah, yeah.
And what she would do is the words were a disconnect with what she heard in their hearts. She could hear what was really going on, and she would say, okay, here's what's really going on. And just immediately, I mean, everybody goes, whoa, where did that come from? But this kind of awareness, it's the kind of thing, like if you'll see this in people around you. You might walk into a room, and all of a sudden, you know, the person you're with is seeing stuff, smelling stuff, tasting stuff, whatever, that you don't even notice. And they bring it to your attention. You go, oh, my God, that's there. That's happening.
Yep, yep.
Now I smell that. The next one is curiosity. The best are super, super curious. You see this in Howard Stern. You see this in Rush Limbaugh. You see this in all the great talent. They ask questions about almost everything. So they're always acquiring knowledge and information. And they're very fast on their feet, so they can change direction very quickly. The curious people are almost always very intelligent. And you can tell this by how good the questions are that they ask. The reverse isn't always true. Intelligent people aren't always curious. Some people are just very, very smart, and they're satisfied with what they know, and, you know, they aren't very curious. But curious people are usually intelligent. And the curiosity allows them to gather all this material that is possible to create stuff from. And that combined with their awareness, they notice stuff, they ask questions about it, and the next thing is the imagination. They all have a great imagination. They naturally recognize, you know, thoughts, feelings, experiences, and ideas. And they can connect the dots. Stuff, you know, all kinds of stuff that may not connect into normal people, all of a sudden they'll connect it, and they'll see a bigger picture. They'll see a whole different kind of a view and invent kind of new and interesting things that they see and feel and whatever. So imagination, tends to create, you know, really extraordinary content. The next one, and by the way, awareness, curiosity, imagination, I don't think you can teach that. You can make people more aware, like in my authentic personality workshops. I train people be more aware, to really pay attention to their senses, what they see, hear, taste, touch, or smell. But your awareness, your curiosity, your imagination, I think you're wired that way.
Well, I think, just jumping in here, for people listening to this, I think it's more important that people who have the power of programming stations are hearing what you're saying, so they know what to look for, as opposed to people who are already talent saying, okay, I'm gonna smell things better. I'm going to be aware. I'm going to be more curious. You're absolutely right. You can enhance somebody's attributes, but you can't make them happen to begin with.
Nope.
But those who are looking for things, if they became aware that this is what they should be looking for in talent, as opposed to somebody who toes the party line and talks to the choir, or sounds like the guy before, or doesn't break format, maybe the stations would be better, and they would be better programmers and managers. See, I don't think, and don't lose your train of thought there because you're on a roll, but I don't think that we are stocking radio with the right type of people at this point to make it reach its full potential. And the managers have to be like directors. They can't be just bean counters or only interested in the bottom line or only interested in sales. As a matter of fact, this trend toward the term brand manager disturbs me because because it takes away from the idea of program director. Could you imagine a new movie by Federico Fellini, the brand manager of Roma? You know, or Stanley Kubrick, the brand manager of 2001. These were directors. This is vision. This is art. And the people have got to realize that even though radio is a business, it's also an art form. And it's not just an art form, it's a business. And this is good business. I've had my say. Go ahead.
Well, it's totally an art. I mean, the people that are creating the content are artists. I mean, they just create this magical, interesting, cool stuff.
Well, maybe they should be hired. Yeah, that's the point. Hire artists to do art, you know. Go on. I'm sorry.
The next content trait is one that, you know, you're not wired this way. Age and living life and stuff is an important component of this, and that's experience. And I've found that the best people have really tried to experience a lot in life. They've been there and done that. They, you know, maybe they've lived in lots of places. They've traveled a lot. They've held different jobs. They've faced adversity. They've dealt with pain. They've experienced success and happiness. they know a lot, you know, whether it's formal education, reading, School of Hard Knocks, and this experience helps them deal with a range of subjects and helps them connect with all kinds of different people and helps them really utilize their awareness, their curiosity, and their imagination.
See, and I think
so many things.
I think that's a really important point. And I think that if you put young people on the air just because they're young, in order to say, well, young people want to hear young people, the young person on the air exposed for 3 or 4 hours a day or 2 hours a day, you see very quickly their lack of experience. I believe that young listeners will listen to an older person who talks their language and respect them for the experience if the older person on the air shows them respect and talks their language,
yep,
but shares the experience.
No, I couldn't agree with you more. Well, look at Howard Stern. I mean, what the hell is he? He's probably 60 now or
mm-hmm.
something.
Mm-hmm.
And he has no trouble at all relating to all ages.
Right.
I mean, he doesn't. He's stayed current. He pays attention to life. He pays attention to where life's going. And, I completely agree with you. The final one of the content traits, and this is really a key, and this is something that sometimes makes the talent that we should hire difficult to get along with, but quirkiness. The best content creators are wired different. They don't have conventional thoughts. They have peculiar thoughts. They have really different ways of thinking. They have strong opinions that really grab attention. They even use different odd words and, you know, cause listeners to, you know, talk about who they are. They're quirky people. They're not your normal person. And those are the content traits: awareness, curiosity, imagination, experience, and quirkiness. And then performance. What makes them able to really present something with impact and power once they create it and use their, you know, appealing personal traits? Well, the first thing is the what I call communication, and this is the ability to say more using fewer words. They have an extraordinary clarity of expression, and they can paint powerful word pictures. They have a great ability to use what I call dazzling details, and that's really colorful, descriptive language that really ignites the imagination in the listener, so you can see the pictures, you can feel the emotions. They have this, you know, special ability to take complicated subjects and turn them into simple, really concise kind of things. And they have a natural flair for drama and dramatic presentation. That's just who they are. You see this with Stern. You see this with Rush. You see this with Kid Craddock. I mean, these are the people that whose work I probably know the best, and, you know, people that I haven't actually worked directly with Stern, but I've worked with Kid Craddock a lot, and with Rush Limbaugh. The next thing is passion. The best performers on the air are people that are very emotional and demonstrative and passionate, and they're this way on the air, around the office, during the job interview. They just can't turn it off. They have strong feelings about almost everything in their life, and they, you know, express their emotions readily. Again, this kind of can make them very challenging to manage, but on the air it gives them this range of expression that really connects with people. The next one is courage in terms of performance traits. The best don't live with a wide range of fears. They don't naturally second-guess themselves and worry about how they're saying things, what they're saying. They have the courage to express what they really think and feel all the time. They're not worried about venturing into kind of uncharted territory. And I guess, you know, they're the kind of people that believe it's easier to beg for forgiveness than seek permission. And this is really, I mean, and I'm only talking about these two because I think they're very widely known, but this has been one of the keys to success to most of the great talent on the air, and the reason that they finally succeeded is that They just went ahead and did what they thought should be done. They didn't ask for permission. Howard Stern didn't ask for permission to stop playing music and interviewing, you know, people that, you know, like, for instance, Howard Stern interviews a lot of people that most people, you know, don't even know who they are. I mean, misfits, weirdos, you know, the only criteria to get on the Howard Stern show is that he has an interest in you. He cares about learning about something about you. There's something about you that he finds interesting. And, you know, if he believes it's interesting, he believes he can make it interesting to his audience. So, courage. The final one here is judgment. And I think that the best, you know, can temper their courage with some judgment. And they have an ability to kind of, without taking away their courage, they have an ability to kind of hear what's going on the show and, you know, be able to filter things that need to be filtered. But, you know, that's not a ton of stuff. That's the kind of stuff that might, you know, take the license away from the licensee and, you know, be a hugely offensive kind of thing. They have some kind of a filter and some kind of a judge. And even how they present things, they can hear in real time what they're saying and how to either pull it back or blow it up and make it more interesting. So the performance traits, communication, passion, courage, and judgment. So those are the 14 traits I look for. Truth is, you can't find the 14 traits in very many people. And this is how I try to help clients assemble shows. We will try to find the 14 traits in the people that we hire. Maybe some of them have most of the content traits and not many of the performance traits. So then we'll try to hire somebody who has the performance traits. Maybe we don't have all the personal traits in one person. So then we try to hire somebody to fill in the traits that aren't there. And that's how we assemble shows. I think that, frankly, unwittingly, we in radio, and this is when I started trying to break this down. I mean, when I first started listening to the radio and became really excited about radio was a station in Seattle called KJR. And most of the shows were one-person shows. Mm-hmm. Later, radio kind of evolved, and you know, I think it's a practical thing. The amount of time you have to fill each day and each week, it's pretty hard for one person. The other thing is it's very hard to find the 14 traits. So, you know, if you have multiple personalities and you assemble them and look for these 14 traits, you have the chance to have a very powerful show.
Or a powerful station with different people with different traits. It's like, yep, sports. I mean, there's no, you know, if we were having a conversation now about a baseball, what are the traits of a good ball player? Well, they have to be a great pitcher, great catcher, great hitter, great slider, great runner, great judgment, great vision. You're not going to have that all in one person, but if you have a team of 9 guys or 15 guys or whatever it is that composes a bench, you can have a very good team, and radio is a team sport. It is a sport of formats. So, again, this is something, what we're talking about right now needs to be heard by management, by ownership, not by talent. The people, unfortunately, a lot of people with these traits are not even interested in radio. They have to be recruited. They have to, yep, be trained. They have to be found. But no, these are ideals. These are not, if there was any one person with all 14 of these, my gosh, you know, we'd have a golden age of radio around this person or these people. But this is an ideal to shoot for. And I want to say here, as we come to the conclusion of this, that some of the things that I mentioned earlier, because we live in a time when things are taken out of context, and because I don't have all 14 traits myself, I do worry about being misunderstood. I absolutely think that conservative political talk radio has a life that could go on forever, that there is a role for it. What frustrates me is that some people see that as the only option, and that when I hear people say Sean Hannity should talk about something else once in a while, or Rush Limbaugh should talk about something else. No, I think these guys should be left alone. They should be grandfathered in. They should be kept on the radio for as long as they're capable of going. But it should not be a given that every new talk show host who comes, you know, up out of their 20s and 30s and wants to break into this business has to go that path, and that not every station has to be a conservative political talk station, that there are all these other options. What's your reaction to that?
Well, I completely agree. It's one of the reasons I stopped going to a lot of these talk radio conventions, because talk radio became defined as, and it's kind of a self-fulfilling prophecy, conservative political talk.
Mm.
And that's all they talk about.
Well,
and I would never hear anybody talking about any specific ideas or stations or formats. As an example, a station, and I forget what year we started this, there's a station in Minneapolis that is a female talk station. And, you know, and it's been on for years. It doesn't get huge ratings, and, I mean, I think it could get better ratings. There's things I think it could do. But it has, you know, I'd like to see people talking about that. I'd like to see us talking about some of these podcasts, some of the programs that NPR has created, talking about possible ideas, new ideas, you know, for formats or subjects or ideas for formats that, you know, that could work. But of course, then we'd have to find some company that's willing to try it.
Well, that's why I'm saying I hope management is listening to this, because ultimately it'll increase their business. Ultimately, it'll make radio stations valuable again. Ultimately, by not being so concerned about business and being concerned about magic, hoopla, show business, and art, they actually will be doing better business. The way to increase the value of the stick as an asset is to bring magic back to it, because that was the only reason it had such an overblown value to begin with. The irony of the bean counter mentality is, in an effort to maintain the value of the asset, they're taking away the thing that they abhor, magic, and not realizing that the magic is what has given the asset an inflated value. It's such an ironic situation that I don't know how to get that across, because
we could, as you say, we could go on forever, and I've got a bunch of other thoughts.
Well, we'll do it again, of course.
But one of the key ones to me is the idea of, you know, what exactly are we trying to do with radio, and even what is radio, or what is this audio entertainment thing? And the big thing to me is that we, in this day and age, in the radio business, and, you know, I guess economics forces and whatever, we're still looking to create these big mass appeal formats. And to me, that goes against everything that's happening in the world. The successful things are the things that are specialties, that are specializing.
Mm-hmm.
Instead of the mass appeal, I call it, I guess, Cume versus connection.
Yeah.
Like the thing that has survived, and it is a specialty, and it does have a life that will go on forever. Albeit I'd love to see it be more like what I think Rush envisioned it to be, and whatever is this, you know, conservative political talk radio. I tend to think it would be much better if it was thought of more in the being a champion or guardian of traditional American values, which takes it beyond politics.
Well, take it away from the partisanship. That's the original reason that conservative talk radio became so popular in the early 90s was not because it was Republican, was because it resonated with a lot of non-political values that were populist. People were very wary of big media. They were very wary of big government. They were very wary of big religion. They were very wary of big business. And somehow the conservative message resonated with that in a non-political way, but in a populist way. Later, it became Republican and Democrat, and you had these guys on the air carrying water for politicians. See, if I ever went back to being a talk show host, which I was for years, I never will lend my endorsement to a politician or a political party. That to me would be the absolute most embarrassing and lowest thing that you could do as a talk show host, to put yourself in a situation where you're carrying water for those scoundrels.
Yep.
And that to me is a no-brainer. But, you know, it went that direction. First of all, I am so pleased that we have a chance to have you here on this platform of Talkers Magazine in its new 21st century multimedia configuration. So much of what you and I have just discussed now is the same thing we discussed 25 years ago, because they're universals and you still got it. You still have wonderful insights and information that I'm so proud to share with our readers, viewers, listeners, consumers in the industry. How do people get in touch with you to be able to tap in more to the resources that you provide?
Very simple. They can email me. It's bill@authenticpersonality.biz, B-I-Z. Bill@authenticpersonality.biz.
Great. And we will also, of course, repeat this in the print version and the accompanying text versions of this conversation.